possible by listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Live from WJFF Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday and Dan Hoost is here. He's the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Remind us on early voting times and times for Election Day. Also, the County Manager has released their tentative 2025 budget for Sullivan County. We'll learn more. Plus, attention artists, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance has grants for you. We'll talk to the grants administrator about what's available and when you need to apply. Plus, it's Restaurant Week in the Hudson Valley. Participating restaurants offer some prefix deals. We'll talk to one of the restaurants that's participating. All coming up. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks open higher this morning as the Labor Department delivered a weaker-than-expected jobs report. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped more than 300 points in early trading.
The monthly headcount suggests U.S. employers added just 12,000 jobs in October, fewer than forecasters had projected. But that number was distorted by a variety of factors. An ongoing strike at Boeing depressed manufacturing employment, and hurricanes Helene and Milton, which made landfall shortly before the October tally, almost certainly put a dent in the job total as well. The unemployment rate, which is less sensitive to temporary distortions, held steady during the month. It remains a low 4.1%. Job gains for August and September were revised down by a total of 112,000 jobs. Economists believe the labor market is gradually cooling, but not as sharply as the October job count would suggest. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Pennsylvania is among the seven swing states in this year's presidential election. Joe Biden won the state in 2020. Democrats are trying to keep Pennsylvania this year for Vice President Kamala Harris. Republicans are trying to flip the state back into their column for victory for former President Donald Trump. NPR's Windsor Johnston spoke with registered voters there.
Sarah Hutchins is a registered Democrat in Philadelphia County. She says her choice was easy.
Kamala has a complete understanding of middle class and a working parent and working adults and students who are trying to get out of student loans, and I think she just has the best interest for the middle class.
Tammy Rigway is a registered Republican from Allentown. She says she's faced a lot of backlash for supporting Donald Trump.
I'm being called a garbage, a deplorable. The left is coming after us, and that's the only thing they have.
Both candidates have been campaigning hard for the state's 19 electoral votes. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
Emergency teams in Spain are struggling to restore basic services to the Spanish region of Valencia. Flash floods this week led to the deaths of more than 200 people and caused widespread devastation. Hundreds of thousands of people are without water. The president of the Valencia region has announced $270 million in aid for residents, but many are criticizing the disaster response by Spanish authorities. Lucy Begley is a teacher at a school in Valencia.
On Tuesday night around 8 o'clock, everyone got an alarm on their phone saying, stay inside, it's very dangerous. However, by this point, many people were trapped. The government responded far too late to what was going to happen when it had been predicted a long time before. And that's why a lot of people of Valencia are just devastated, but also quite angry about the whole situation.
She spoke to the BBC. This is NPR. The political party that has ruled Botswana since the Southern African country's independence from Britain almost six decades ago suffered a resounding defeat in Wednesday's elections. Kate Bartlett reports on the seismic political shift in the diamond-rich nation.
They say a week is a long time in politics. Try 58 years. That's how long the Botswana Democratic Party was in power. No longer, after voters rejected them at this week's poll. Final tallies are expected later Friday, with the opposition Umbrella for Democratic Change Party on track to win. Long one of the most stable countries in Africa, Botswana's president has accepted defeat and promised a smooth transition of power. For NPR News, I'm Kate Bartlett in Johannesburg.
The Chicago Cubs have agreed to make changes to Wrigley Field to accommodate people with disabilities. The Justice Department says the ballpark currently is in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Under the settlement, the Cubs agree to replace non-compliant wheelchair spaces and companion seats with wheelchair spaces that have better views of the field. And for the first time, Wrigley Field will provide front row access for fans who use wheelchairs. The Los Angeles Dodgers are holding their World Series Championship parade today. The route will take them throughout downtown L.A. There is also a special ticketed event at Dodgers Stadium, although the team notes it won't be feasible for fans to attend both the parade and the stadium event. The Dodgers defeated the New York Yankees in 5 games to win this year's World Series. Slugger Freddie Freeman was the series MVP. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the John Templeton Foundation, funding interdisciplinary research and catalyzing conversations to inspire awe and wonder. Learn more at templeton.org. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, we check in with Dan Hoost. He's the communications director of Sullivan County Government. And we're going to check in with him right now, but he's literally on the phone getting the latest early voting numbers.
I am getting the latest voting numbers right now from our Board of Elections. They are working so incredibly hard, let me tell you.
We are live, local, and late-breaking.
Yes.
I'm taking a picture here.
Yeah,
I think
he's taking a picture
this,
of
like,
me.
Literally, it's like he's got the microphone, the phone.
Yeah, Tim Bruno's taking a picture of me right now. I'm talking to the Board of Elections. They are working very hard today. They're just bringing up the latest numbers. We had 900 early voters yesterday, but now they're going to tell me 902 yesterday,
okay,
which was it was enormous.
And
hang on just a second.
We've been seeing record numbers of early voting across the country and in New York and Pennsylvania. Dan is getting the latest numbers for Sullivan County. Early voting began last weekend, and we'll talk about the how long it goes and what you need to know for the November 5th election in terms of times for polling if you prefer to go in person. Dan, who's talking to our Board of Elections live at Radio Chatskill. This is the news you need, and
that's
we're getting it for you fresh from the source at this moment. It looks like, according to several reports, that early voting is surging, as I said, across the country. Also, in New York City, they always have a kind of higher voter turnout in presidential elections, and this year is no exception. Dan is off the phone now, and what can you tell us?
Wanted to give you the most up-to-date numbers. I should have done that before coming on air, but
what is the what is the late-breaking news? No, this is good. People know that it's real and fresh.
Well, our Board of Elections Commissioners, Lori Deanna, wanted to make sure people knew what the latest numbers were, because I think they're excited about the turnout we've seen so far. Over 5,000 people have already early voted. Is that a verb, early voted?
It is now.
In Sullivan County, we have polls open today through Sunday at both the Government Center in Monticello and our Public Health Office in Liberty. We have seen around 1,000 people every single day since we started the early voting. I can't tell you the last time I saw the Government Center this busy, especially on, I think it was Tuesday, when we also had students from the Cook and Rutherford schools come in for Halloween treats, trick-or-treat. So we had like hardly any room to walk in the Government Center at that moment. But lines are actually moving quite fast, and our Board of Elections has prepared a long time for this. They are very gratified to see the turnout, and we hope it continues right through to Election Day. The only day there will not be any voting is on Monday.
So, again, the numbers for Sullivan County, those are big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any indication of, like, I know you just got these numbers, but is this pacing ahead of previous early voting times?
Certainly, because I can't remember if we even had early voting the last election or not. It's a fairly recent. least
time we could have done it was the first one, 2020.
Yeah, and this has definitely been a greater turnout than that, because early voting was viewed in some quarters with some suspicion and uncertainty, and now people seem to have become more used to it, more accustomed to it, and prefer it over having to figure out a time on election day to come vote, or also do absentee or mail-in voting. So I think it has become and will continue to be very popular.
And how has it been for folks who were, you know, the poll workers? We talked about the need for poll workers earlier in the year. And are they experiencing a nice civil public coming through and exercising?
This is a randomized weekly test of WJFF's emergency alert system. This is only a test.
And contrary to what you may hear from some, we do not control the weather, but that is a randomized test of the emergency broadcast system that comes on, you know, randomly. So as I was saying, the poll workers, we were always asking folks earlier in the year to come and help out at the polls. You've got a nice group of folks that are doing that. And are they experiencing like a you know, civil folks coming through? And
from all that I have been able to hear and see, yes,
smooth.
It has been. Yeah. And that's the thing that really would upset people is if they come and they run into a whole bunch of issues. We try to make it as smooth as possible so that you aren't frustrated. Even if you aren't in, for whatever reason, our voter records, we can set it up so that you have an affidavit ballot that you can vote on. And then our Board of Elections will take a look and see, you know, what was there an issue on our end, on the state's end, or are you actually not supposed to be voting? And that's one thing I really want to highlight, because there's a lot floating out there about fraudulent elections. In Sullivan County, which is what I can speak to, there's not fraudulent elections. Our Board of Elections works very hard. It's a bipartisan office, and it makes sure that votes count as they should, and votes that are not proper don't count as they should not count. I know it has been a thing where there's talk about after this election, people are going to be questioning the results or whatever. I actually, frankly, think that's a little bit, actually not a little bit, a lot dangerous for a democracy, because if you stop trusting your vote results, what's left? I mean, really, that's our democracy. Well, I can say at the Sullivan County Board of Elections, you could trust your vote results.
I voted early on the first day. I went to the Monticello Government Center and experienced a smooth process.
I'm glad to hear it.
And I was standing in line, and I was thinking, because we talked about this here, and you know, we were putting the word out for poll workers, and I was looking at the people that are sitting there, and I was like, how great of you to like volunteer to do this. And there, I was noticing, like, you know, they're paired up. They may not know each other. They probably don't, but it was all very smooth and they were smiley. And I got my sticker and, I'm all, you know, it seemed like a good thing. I mean, it's I called it early anxious in-person voting because I think that folks are anxious all around.
There's a lot of anxiety on both sides, or on all sides really, of this. But what warms my heart is to see how many people came out and vote. That's what we are afforded, that right, that privilege here in this democratic republic, as we call it. And that's why I say, whoever wins, let's trust those results, that they are accurate, because otherwise I think we are then eating away at the very base of our democracy. Because again, if you can't trust your vote results, I don't know what's left for you to do or say, because I don't know, how will you ever trust them? So, and I'm not saying to turn a blind eye to any fraud. There is fraud that gets attempted, but I believe that our Board of Elections and Board of Elections across this country are working very hard to maintain the integrity of the voting system.
Well, and you know, we've talked to Board of Elections folks in Pike County, Ulster County, over in Wayne County, here. So, you know, they're doing that work, and
yes,
that's their job. And so it made me happy to see these folks who, you know, either were just there for the day, or are a few people from the Board of Elections helping out there too. You know, this is your job and you're making sure this is secure. So, it felt good. I don't know. I felt proud about it.
Yeah. And for candidates, don't they want to win fair and square? To me, that's the sweetest victory. So we will see. Probably within an hour or two after polls close at 9 p.m. on Tuesday, we will start seeing those results. We will have it up on our website for the local results. Usually by the morning, almost all of our election districts have reported in. I can't guarantee that, but that's been my experience. And then, of course, on a national level, we should know a lot more on Wednesday, too.
Yeah. And then so locally on Tuesday, those that get counted and put up on the website, those are considered unofficial results.
Right.
And when do those get certified?
It depends. If there are no court challenges to anything, then they'll probably get certified, and I'd say in a month's time, maybe sooner. If there are challenges either at the local or state or even national levels, we may have to wait on certifying those results until those challenges are resolved.
And we just should note, a programming note, that here at Radio Catskill, we will be bringing you live coverage from NPR, election coverage from 7 p.m. to who knows when. But during the night, once the polls close at 9 in New York and 8 in Pennsylvania, we'll be bringing you local races and local results as they are put up on the websites as they're announced.
I'll be one of those listening.
So we'll be here for you for that. And let's remind folks again about early voting. Early voting goes through this Sunday?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And from here on out, it's the same time period every day. We were doing 12 to 8, I think, yesterday and Tuesday just to accommodate people who might want to come later in the day. But now, every day through Sunday, it will be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Government Center on North Street in Monticello and at our public health office, which is part of our social services campus off Sunset Lake Road in Liberty.
And then on, there's no voting on Monday.
No voting on Monday.
Election day. Polls open in New York at 6 and close at 9. And folks should check their polling location if you don't know already. And you can go to the Board of Elections website at the county government.
Right. SullivanNY.gov now. You can still go to SullivanNY.us, but we have switched to SullivanNY.gov and look up Board of Elections. It lists it there. Or even simpler than that, in my opinion, give a call to the Board of Elections, 807-0400.
Just like you did at the top of the show.
That's what I was doing now. Yeah.
We're talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, and joining us here with some updates. Let's talk about the one other mention is that county offices are closed on election day with the exception of the Board of Elections.
Yes, obviously the Board of Elections. It'll be one of their busiest days of the year. So, but yes, county offices, that are normally open on Tuesdays will be closed. Of course, 24/7 facilities like the care center, the 911 center, the jail, the sheriff's office, they'll all still be operating normally. But the rest of our offices will be closed for election day.
All right, the county manager has released the tentative 2025 budget. What can you tell us? What are some headlines here?
I can. As we speak, the documents are being delivered to legislators today. The proposed 2025 Sullivan County budget weighs in at just over $300 million, includes a 2.5% increase, proposed increase in the tax levy, which is under the state-mandated tax cap. It doesn't propose incurring any new debt or dipping into the fund balance of the general fund for operations. According to the county manager, Josh Potosik, who is proposing this, the tax increase is proposed due to the county's nearly $3 million investment that we've just made and are continuing to make in improving EMS system countywide, where we have those fly cars that you love thinking are actually flying around around the county. They are flying around, I have to say. We now have gotten our average response time improved to 15 minutes less than what it was before. I think last time I came on, I said there was an 11-minute improvement. Now there's a 15-minute improvement. There's also an estimated 8.5% hike in our health insurance premiums. That's about $1.5 million. So those things are forcing us to take a look at proposing a very small but significant tax increase. It does position the county to maintain its fiscal stability, which I think taxpayers demand, because we're thinking that the sales tax revenue that we have seen at historic highs is now starting to cycle downward. Everything has a cycle. You know, things go up and things go down. And we're starting to see that that may be on a sustained decrease. How far it'll go, we don't really know. But this budget puts into place a number. We have a very healthy fund balance and a number of other conservative measures to make sure that we aren't going to be looking at some horrific tax hike just a few years down the road here. One thing I can say about Josh, having worked with him for many years, but also then having covered his budgets for many years before that when I worked for the Democrat, he is very conservative in his budgeting.
And so this is not up on the website just yet. You said it's being delivered to legislators as we speak.
By the time I get back to the office, it should be delivered to them, after which point I can put that up on the website in its detail. It will be on there. You'll be able to not only look at the press release I put out about it, but a summary of it that is several dozen pages long, and the full, I think it's around 400 or 500 pages if you want to dive into the details.
You need something, some light reading. Let's talk about some of the other bullet points, some of the other highlights here, though.
Of the budget?
Yes.
Yeah. So it proposes $21.6 million for road and bridge work throughout the county, once again to be achieved without going into debt.
Is that an increase?
No, that is actually a slight decrease from last year, which was, I think, at 23.6. $2.7 million to continue the already successful EMS fly car system through the county, as we talked about. $2 million for a housing trust fund to address the housing crisis, plus $250,000 to supplement an existing New York State program that provides local renters with first and last month's rent and security deposits. The idea with this is to get some of our families that may actually have jobs but just can't afford the security deposit and the first month's rent out of the emergency housing, so that we can get into the emergency housing those who currently have no job prospects and thus can't get into a regular rentable apartment. $600,000 for legislators to use towards tourism event promotion. And the Visitors Association is still getting everything they normally get. This is just something separate for legislators. $500,000 to continue the Sullivan Promise Scholarship Program. $300,000 for the Youth Bureau, $250,000 to develop a water resource map to fully understand our water resources and where infrastructure should and should not be placed, $244,000 for the legislature to offer discretionary funding, and $65,000 to continue the popular local workforce development partnership we have with BOCES, where residents can learn skills like welding, car repair, construction trades at no cost to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you talk to any cuts or any decreases? We mentioned just the slight decrease in the investment in roads, bridges, and things. Are there any other places where the county had to make some decisions?
Yeah, no, actually, there are no cuts, no layoffs at this point. Now, at that point, other than, of course, yes, the 21.6 is less, but I wouldn't really call that a cut. Mm-hmm. The budget shifts every year on all of that. It is a decrease, but not compromising safety and road and bridge work, that kind of thing. The legislators themselves, though, have until December 20th to review this, so they can make a whole bunch of changes to it. I think there probably will be some. We will find out about that in the weeks to come. There will be public hearings set. They haven't been set yet, but they will be, I expect, in December. And then it will be adopted by the legislature in December, which then it becomes the official county budget.
All this late breaking news.
Yes, lots going on.
We will take a break and be back with more from Dan Hoost, who is the spokesperson for communications director and spokesperson in general,
all the above
guy for the Sullivan County government. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week on our show, we dig into what it means to cook by feel, and how you can learn to ditch recipes and just wing it. We talk with Vivian Howard, star of A Chef's Life, and scientist-turned-cook Nick Sharma. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're back with Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Want to talk about something that you sent a press release out about earlier this week. There's a positive test for an animal for rabies near Monticello, a skunk. Why should we be alerted to this, and what's going on?
Well, because that means that rabies continues to circulate in the wildlife community, and it can easily be transmitted to pets or livestock that we have. This was in the Monticello area, but that means that it could be widespread far beyond that. Town of Thompson, town of Forestburg, town of Fallsburg, Mammocating. All this is to say, make sure that your pet's vaccinations are up to date, and if they aren't, talk to your veterinarian. Or we will be announcing shortly, I believe, a free rabies vaccination clinic coming up. I think it's going to be set for December. So if you're worried about it, though, I wouldn't wait. I'd go ahead and work it out with your vet now, because if your animal is outside, it means it's at risk for rabies. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. There's a job description and a posting now up for the Human Rights Commission. We have talked about the legislature wanting to hire someone as executive director. So now that's been approved and posted.
Yes. I think this is a big thing, because we've already been looking for commissioners. There's a 9-member board of commissioners, and legislators are looking for volunteers to serve on that. But then we also have an executive director who is going to be working hand in hand with these commissioners. And actually, it's a paid position. They will be responsible for the day-to-day operations of the Human Rights Commission. My understanding is, and I believe the job description reflects this as well, that this is going to be a full-time position. It's going to be offering, let me just take a look here real quickly here. It's on our website, by the way. That's where I'm looking, and anyone else can as well. At SullivanNY.gov, look under Find Jobs, and there's a Human Rights Commission Executive Director. And of course, I'm not going to find it as soon as I need to. This has been operating by the skin of my teeth day today. So I put it up on social media. It is out there, it's looking for somebody who has got some experience in handling these kinds of situations. But honestly, I would say if you have an interest in this job, regardless of what your background is, apply for it, because I doubt we're going to get a lot of candidates to begin with. And we are looking for people who not only have some experience, but really also have deep connections in the community, or are willing to form those deep connections. And it's something that is this legislature considers very important for Sullivan County to have. And I think even the prior executive directors, all of them would say that it's an important job and that we need somebody to fill it.
And it's been vacant for a minute.
Yeah, it's been, 2 years now, I think.
I pulled it up here. Executive Director, you got it. Human Rights Commission.
Thank you.
responsibilities for direction of a countywide program to help eliminate discrimination and prejudice, and fostering mutual understanding and self-respect among all racial, religious, age, ethnic, and other protected classes under state and federal law in Sullivan County. So this position also is going to be responsible for establishing and coordinating the countywide program of consumer protection and education. Mm-hmm.
They really go hand in hand if you think about it.
Right. Yes. And they're, minimum qualification, salary, commensurate with experience there. An important role for the county to get filled after being vacant for a little bit.
And I would say the more people we have applying, the better candidate that we're going to find in the end. So I encourage people to apply.
A hiring event coming up next Thursday at the Career Center in Monticello, while we're talking about job opportunities.
Mm-hmm. They do this every few weeks, usually with different employers. It's going to be Thursday, November 7th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Career Center. That's 50 North Street, just up the street from the Government Center near the Monticello Elks Lodge. We're going to have the Delaware Valley Job Corps Center from Calicoon and the ARC of the Greater Hudson Valley, which is sort of like the Center for Discovery, that kind of thing, dealing with people with developmental disabilities. But of course, we also will be hiring for a number of different positions we have open, including entry-level positions in Sullivan County Government. So bring a resume, dress to impress. On-the-spot interviews will be offered. Again, that's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Thursday, November 7th.
Yeah, when I went to the website to find the listing for the executive director of the Human Rights Commission, I had to scroll down a little bit here. There's a a number of jobs open here, a number of jobs posted and available.
Yep, and we have great benefits. Sometimes the private sector can outdo us in salaries, but it's very rare that they ever can outdo us in the health and retirement benefits that we offer.
A blood drive coming up on Monday. If you've not early voted or you're waiting for waiting for election day, here's something to do on Monday. But in all seriousness, a blood drive was still a blood shortage.
Yes. 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. this Monday, November 4th, in the hearing room. That's where our legislature usually meets, at the Governance Center in Monticello. Appointments are preferred, but walk-ins are certainly welcome, so don't let that stop you. There is always a deep need for blood, and you could be a giver one day and a getter the next. So it's important. We hope people show up.
The composting bins, the composting program, how's that going? So we haven't talked about that.
We haven't talked about it a long time, but all that talk that we did about it paid off.
Oh, good.
We had needed to get to 400 people to really impress us that this is something we could go forward with as a full sustained program. We got to that about a month or two ago. Gave out all our free bins. You can still come and drop off your composting for free, but you've got to bring it in some sort of bin that then you take back with you. We don't take it in bags or anything like that. You have to drop it off. I mean, you can cover it up while you bring it here, but the only thing you can leave with us are the actual organics. Nothing further. No bags, no bins that you have to take back with you. But that also means that since we hit that threshold, we are going to be making application to the State Department of Environmental Conservation to create and build our own composting facility in Monticello. Currently, what we're doing is shipping it to Ulster County, and they're making money off of it. We don't really see much in the way with that. We need to. And plus, composting that we have locally, I think really people would love being able to drive to the Monticello landfill and pick up truckloads of that stuff to put in their gardens.
While we're on the subject of composting, environment, trash, garbage, there was that solid waste management plan commentary was open to the public until October 15th. Mm-hmm. What's the next step for that after this
for comment? All those comments to be incorporated into a final plan that is then submitted to the state. State then gets the DEC gets to take a look at that. And I believe it's going to be late winter, early spring next year that the final one will be approved by the state.
There's a survey still going for your parks that goes through the end of the month. It's November 1st already.
Yeah, can you believe it?
I was just looking like through November. Like I started to say next month. Like, no, it's this month through the 30th.
Yeah,
this survey again is for folks and how they experience the county parks.
Yep, and this is sort of like what we did with our composting. We need more people to get involved. We have about 300 responses to the survey. We need to get to at least 500, and we're hoping actually to get closer to 1,000 responses so that we really understand across the community how they feel about our parks, what they like, what they don't like, what they use, what they don't use, what they want to see, what they don't want to see. And these are our parks like Livingston Manor Covered Bridge, Stone Arch Bridge Park, the County Museum, Fort Delaware, Minisink Battleground, D&H Canal Historical Park. We want to know, we need to know, so that we can create a master plan for what to do with these parks. We have a new park coming in Calicoon, the Calicoon Riverside Park, might be open as early as this coming year. But we have all these existing parks that we're not ignoring or giving up on. Well, what should we be doing there? We need to have more people than we already have had respond to that. You can find the link on our parks webpage on the county website or on social media. Or if you want a paper copy to fill out, come into our parks office in the government center and we'll give you one.
And we were reminding folks of key dates coming up, of course, Election Day, Tuesday the 5th, but Veterans Day, November 11th, and the list of services has already been released about for the county.
Yeah, they're giving me one or two last listings today, so I'm going to have that's another one that's going to be out later today. I thought it would be out earlier, but they were like, wait, we're confirming one last thing. So again, skin of the teeth day is what Friday is for me. But we will have that list out today because it's a week from Monday that Veterans Day will be coming. And that'll be another day that will be closed and we'll be encouraging people just like on Election Day to go out and vote, on Veterans Day to go out and honor our veterans. This is about our living veterans. Memorial Day is about our deceased veterans.
All right. We are going to take a break. Thank you, Dan. And we will be back with more Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Next time on the Waggle of the Monkeys with me, Graham Ricey, on Radio Catskill, our series featuring covers of songs from American songwriters brings us to the songs of Tom Waits. And believe me, these are a real treat. So join me, please, for folky covers of Tom Waits songs on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And it's Restaurant Week in the Hudson Valley through November 10th. The week features prefix menus at over 130 restaurants in 8 counties. One of those in Sullivan County is the Blue Fox Motel. Erin Shearer had profiled the Blue Fox for her series Eating Upstate earlier this year.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves, your background, and how you found your way to the Catskills.
So George has been in the restaurant business, hospitality space, his entire career. So that's something he's done forever, and had several restaurants in the city and then also over in Dumbo in Brooklyn. And then he started coming up here for to get away from the city. Over 20 years ago, 25 years ago, George.
Actually, it's a sad memory, but I remember exactly. I bought my lake house up here on York Lake, which is one of the original ones that was then
in Berryville,
in 1938. Yeah. And I bought it in late 2000. And we needed to do, you know, a bathroom, running water, electricity, and things like that. And by the time we were done, it was the week before September 11. So I remember very well the first time I used my bathroom, it was the weekend after September 11. So I've been up here for a while.
This is not new for you. You guys have been here for many, many years.
Yeah. As we mostly weekenders, so, or, you know, vacation time or things like that, initially. And then we bought the property, the motel property, 2016. And it needed a lot of renovation. So we renovated for a little over 3 years. We opened the restaurant sort of the end of 2019 briefly, and then COVID hit and it shut us down. And then we reopened in the summer of 2020. And at the same time, the motel was getting open in 2020 as well. So we sort of used 2020 as the true launch because it was such a kind of random situation.
What were some of the challenges you had launching both the restaurant and the hotel in the midst of COVID?
No guests, no image, no traveling.
Yeah.
But I guess all the challenges that every single restaurateur and hotelier had. You couldn't travel, you couldn't move. You had to shut down the restaurant.
Initially we shut the restaurant for 4 months, about four months.
4 months.
Because the only thing you could do at the time was potentially was take out, and we were brand new. So that was such a kind of take out in rural Narrowsburg didn't make a whole lot of sense when we were brand new. So we waited. We had to build an entire patio space outside the front of the restaurant so that we could reopen and open outside. So
because that's the only thing
you were allowed.
late June, early July, I believe.
Yeah, we got it back open late July, early August in 2020.
The inside, I don't think we opened it before like September.
You couldn't at the time.
You couldn't.
Yeah, everybody had to be outside at that stage. So everything was outside. And then we had to follow all the regulations related to what the government was issuing at the time. You know, everything had to be spaced. Everybody was masked, certain sanitary issues, you know, the bathrooms were in the inside of the building. So how you manage people spacing themselves out to use the restroom. I mean, you know, just all of that kind of, which everybody was up against, that wasn't unique to us, but, it was kind of a crazy time. The upside was at that same time, lots of city dwellers were trying to spend all of their time up here, away from the city, because that was such a crazy situation. City was such a difficult place to be during COVID, and people were looking for a way to get fresh air and be safe. And so you had sort of a surge of people moving up and interested in the area in a way that hadn't existed pre-COVID. So there was an upside as well as the down, you know, for all the chaos of there was an upside, which was it brought more people to the area because it was accessible. People could drive up in their own car and not take public transportation, partly because public transportation doesn't come directly to where we are. So that works great, you know, and when they found the area, I think people really liked it because it was, you know, beautiful, sparsely populated, it felt safe, you know, which I think was a big sentiment for most people at the time, you know.
It's my understanding that the Blue Fox itself first operated as a hunting and camping lodge in the 1940s. And then around 1955, it, you know, was converted into a more conventional motel, and it operated that way for the next half century. And then it was bought by Russians for a little bit. And by the time that you guys had bought it, it had been in foreclosure. Do I have that correct?
Yep.
That's that. Yep.
So this property started in late 30s by a Long Island state trooper, which is a motorcycle state trooper. We happened lost a leg in an accident. His name was Nick Dale. And apparently was quite a character. So we started where we are right now. He was called the 10 Mile River Colony. And this was in as you said, early 40s, late 30s, 36, 38. And then in the 50s, he sold to Rick Lander's dad, to the Lander's family from the canoe outfitters. And he, Rick's dad, used the one who, you know, they built the house and the restaurant and the pool. You know, we actually have a pool made out of a quarter inch steel, which is pretty incredible. So they took over on the 1950s, and they created what is kind of the current version of the Blue Fox Motel. And then they sold it to a group of investors, Russian, somehow in the early 2000s, and unfortunately, did not work out as it was planned, and they lost it to the bank. And by the time we got it in 2016, it's been in the possession of the bank for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Yep. So the property was pretty much a couple of years away from being demolished because it was severely destroyed. Foundations, pool, roofs, it was destroyed. So we got it. And, you know, we thought it was going to take us, you know, a year, year and a half to do it. And, you know, 3 years later, 3 years later, we opened it, and we're still working on it. It's these old properties, they have a mind of their own, and, you know, refurbishing and repurposing things, it's much harder than building stuff from the ground up.
Tell us a little bit about Hudson Valley Restaurant Week and its mission.
It's been a whole big push by the Sullivan County Visitors Association that all the businesses kind of get together in the hospitality space and work together to attract folks up to the area in general. And so there's been a big push in having us all get involved and participate. They've done a great job of connecting all of us to get involved in supporting an effort like this. The area is still in development, you know, where we are in comparison to more of the right on the Hudson, you know, or the Hudson Valley that's been, you know, up and running for, I don't know, 15 years now, probably, you know, in terms of driving a lot of traffic. Yeah. This area is really new. So we're sort of new participants to the, to the whole area. We're excited about that. So the area, all the local businesses, and in this instance, obviously it's restaurants, you know, we've tried to step up and participate so that we all are collectively building the brand of the area, you know, in terms of being a place, a destination people want to visit and they want to come and eat great food, you know, have a great experience.
We are great, great supporters for anything that anybody can do to promote the area. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you are in you know, just going further south than us, I'm not even talking Manhattan, there's all kinds of people promoting, you know, different types of foods, different types of wines, different types of liquor. Up here, that enormous machine, which is individually done, does not exist. So anybody who comes up with an with a program, an incentive to promote the area, the restaurants, you know, the food, the wines, the tourism, all that. We are great fans of it because there is very little done of that. So the restaurant week, I think is great for absolutely everybody because it does expose all of us and it exposes the area itself because the area itself, it's very under image wise developed. And, you know, the Tourism Association, they're phenomenal and we are great supporters of them. And you know, we're glad to be part of it.
What are your plans for the future in regards to the Blue Fox?
We need to keep on trying to improve. There's a lot of work to be done. We also purchased a couple of other properties next to us that were severely dilapidated. So, and because we have this need for housing, basically when we do large events, for example, weddings, I mean, we only have a limited number of rooms, suites, cabins, and a house. So when we do weddings, it's there is a need for it. And people come to us and goes, where can we stay? Yeah. So we're big supporters of everybody else all around us. We cannot possibly accommodate. Mm-hmm. All the requests that we have, and we, you know, we'll just keep on working on the brand and the restaurant and finishing up the whole thing.
Yeah, I think some of the big things that the big way to sort of, I don't know, categorize it is about creating some more unique experiences for people when they come to us. So first of all, we have a beautiful pool space. And so in the summertime, we've started to do some great events and great collaborations with other brands doing events and stuff there in the space. And it's a place people want to be. They want to hang out. It's a really terrific
experience. Our pool parties, if you've never been to one, you should try to come to one.
It's really, yeah. The property also, we've done a lot of work about creating it can be a wedding venue. It's not our full-time mm-hmm. gig. We have a lot of other things that we're doing, but we did six weddings last year. And it lends itself to helping people understand that there's cool opportunities on the property to do all kinds of things. We did a couple corporate retreats, last year too. It was the first year you could really do any events of any sort with any numbers of people. And the nice part about the property is that you, if you take it over, depending on your numbers, it becomes your playground to do all kinds of interesting things. So depending on who's coming up and what they're doing. So the weddings loved it because they could, it was theirs, you know, for the weekend.
And the corporate retreats.
And same kind of thing with some of these corporate retreats.
And because, family reunions and gatherings, anniversaries. It's really nice setup.
I kind of refer to it more as these kind of, you know, fun, unique experiences that people can have when they're up with us, because we offer both the accommodations plus the food, and we're in a beautiful area. So there's all these great activities to do in town, go hiking, get on the river right here in the Delaware. And so it's just, it just, there's a lot of stuff in the area that lends itself to having a really terrific, community, experience.
And that was Aaron Shearer from Eating Upstate talking to the folks at the Blue Fox Motel who are participating in Hudson Valley Restaurant Week now through November 10th. There's more information about participating restaurants at valleytable.com. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Port Jervis Warming Center provides overnight shelter, an evening meal, breakfast, showers, and more to some folks who experience homelessness each winter. And they're seeking volunteers for this winter's program. Here to tell us more are Dolores Schaefer and Art Colbertson from the Port Jervis Warming Center. Hello, guys.
Hi. Morning.
Thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit more about what you guys do, what services you provide for folks at the Warming Center, and how folks can get involved.
Right. So I think as various warming stations in the area go, we provide a lot more than some of them do. So when someone comes in, they check in, they fill out a form that also asks them what they need help with. You know, if they need help getting documents that they've lost or help connecting to social services or whatever. So we try to do an assessment. No one's forced to do anything they don't want to do. But then they come in, they sit around a big table that can hold like 14 people and have a really nice hot meal. The hot meals are prepared by about 50 to 60 volunteers. They're asked to bring in food at their own expense and deliver it for 15 people, and they do that faithfully. And many of them have been doing it for 10 years or more. Some provide a couple of nights during the season. Some, you know, do it 5 or 10 times. It's absolutely amazing, this group of meal train volunteers.
And you guys are open between November 15th and April 1st. And
that's right.
You have information sessions coming up, one tomorrow, I guess, for folks who want to be interested in becoming a volunteer.
Yes, tomorrow at 10 a.m. It's at the warming station, which is located at St. Peter's Church, which is 31 West Main Street in Port Jervis. The entrance is on Hudson Street, and we'll sit around with coffee and let everybody know how we operate and what the needs are and how they can help. They can do everything from being an overnight volunteer to just coming in for a couple of hours in the evening and help check people in, or coming in for a few hours in the evening and serve meals, or coming in during the day and help do the laundry, because we're very focused on having a very clean and sanitary and safe space. So there's always sheets and blankets, and also guest clothing that we will launder for them if they need it and want it. So those are some of the things. I think one of the most important aspects is that we do have a social service component, where there is someone available in the evening to discuss issues that people may have. And it could be small matters like I lost my Social Security card, or I need a New York State ID. And they need a mailing address to get some of that stuff so they can use the warming station as a mailing address to do that. We cooperate with Department of Social Services and other nonprofit agencies in the community that provide mental health services or substance abuse services and are able to make connections for them. There are some people who, you know, are able to sort of get their act together once they have a place to stay and are able to find an apartment that they can afford, but they don't necessarily have the rental deposit or, you know, first and last month. And so every year we're able to provide rental assistance to about 2 to 3 people on average. And that's really something that transformed their lives. You know, they can start over. They can, you know, live in a dignified way.
Yeah. Well, before we go, we want to let folks know how they could learn more, or where they can get more information about the information sessions and also other ways that they could help you out there.
If you email pjwarming@aol.com, we'll respond immediately. We unfortunately don't have a website yet. There's also an information center the following Sunday, the 10th at 2 p.m., also at the Warming Station. That information is actually up on your website, I believe,
of
Radio Jeff.
Yeah.
Which is very nice. Thank you.
It's on our community announcements at WJFFradio.org.
And I'd like Art has been a volunteer for over 10 years, so I'd like him to say a word or two about what it's meant to him to volunteer.
Art, if you could quickly, that would be great.
Well, I started a while ago thinking it was a good service, and I've been an overnight volunteer. I get in at about 7:30 and do what I need to do, sometimes help with the meal, sometimes just talk with the folks. Sometimes they're eager to talk, and sometimes they're eager to just sit by themselves. I make sure they get the linens, the bedding that they need, and a place to a cot to call their own for the night, and explain the rules. And then we have lights out at 10 o'clock. It goes quiet, and I sit in a reclining chair, and I try hard to stay awake. Sometimes that helps, and sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. But it's important that we have at least 2 people here. The manager is always here. And then a volunteer can be there just in case something comes up, which it has not. Hasn't been anything really serious over the past year. We're concerned, as are the guests, of safety and making sure that they are safe as well as respected.
Yeah. Well, great.
So it's been worthwhile for me.
That sounds great. Great work that you guys are doing. It's at the Port Jervis Warming Station, that information session tomorrow at 10, another one Sunday, November 10th at 2. And again, there's more information on our website about that, wjffradio.org. Dolores and Art, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. One more thing to squeeze in. We always tell you about the great things that are going on in terms of exhibits at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, but we want to tell you about some money available to artists who present there. Tanner Simon is the grants coordinator. He's here to tell us about an information session you have tomorrow for artists.
That's right, Tim. Thank you for having me on the show this morning. I'm the gallery and grants manager at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, New York. And tomorrow we have one last final information session at New Memories in Parksville, New York.
Okay.
And it's from noon to 1.
And so do people need to register for this, or how can they get more information?
So you can register online. It's good for us to know who's going to be there, but you can show up and just write your name down right on location. And all the information is on our website, DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org.
And this is an information session to tell folks, like, hey, you're an artist. There are some pots of money out here for you.
We do. You know what really scares me? It's not Halloween anymore. Something really scares me. There are hundreds of Sullivan County-based artists who are eligible for $3,000 unrestricted grant funding.
And they may not know it.
They don't know it, and they won't apply. And that's for compositional arts, visual arts, and literary arts. We have 2 open in each category. And you can apply on Submittable, and you find it right on our website.
And there's a deadline coming up.
Well, the Individual Artist Fellowship deadline is January 31st, 2025. And our Community Arts and arts education. Deadlines are November 30th. Those applications are open, and those are for arts organizations, nonprofits, and artists working with a fiscal sponsor. The projects have to be based in Sullivan County, and the organization, the fiscal sponsor at the very least, has to be based in Sullivan County as well.
All right, we quickly got you in here, so if folks have questions, they can go to your website. Just one more time to remind folks there.
www.DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org, and go under Empower. You'll find grants, and then it's pretty intuitive, and you'll find your way right to our submittable.
All right. We'll have you back to talk a little longer. Thanks for dealing with the juggling act that is Radio Chatskill.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim.
All right. That's all for this edition. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cook breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
We are in the final stretch of this historic election season. Former President Trump and Vice President Harris are making their last big push before it all comes to a head on November 5th. I'm Scott Detrow. Join us for live special coverage of Election Night 2024 from NPR News. We will bring you the latest as the polls close and the vote totals roll in, with the context and analysis you need to stay informed.
NPR's Election Night coverage starts at 7 Tuesday with local and regional updates.